Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the End Zone and Falcon Zone Pro Football Super Show. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill, and Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing great, Jeremy. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Business is really picking up, I guess, to use the old Jim Ross line. So much to get to. Of course, we're going to recap and preview the Falcons preseason games, talk about some of the stuff there. There's some stuff in End Zone we're going to get to. But, you know, first, let's just dive right into the first thing to really come across the board in the last week. The photos of Jerry Jones in some interesting situations with various young ladies have surfaced, and Jerry actually made the statement earlier this week that they are misrepresentative. What do you guys take from this?
Well, I did see the film, or the photos. I'm not, no offense, Mr. Jones, but I'm not real sure how you can misrepresent those. it kind of was what it was. It's unfortunate. I read the story behind what was going on and how the guy had been, whomever the guy that got his hands on the photos, which they felt like may have been stolen or leaked from TMZ, had been over the course of so many years or months or whatever, had been trying to basically blackmail Mr. Jones into giving him money. And, of course, when it didn't work, he finally, in the end, just ended up just leaking them out. But not really sure how you can misrepresent that personally.
Well, what I can say from my perspective is that owners have to beware as well. You know, when you're a public figure and being the owner of the Cowboys, on top of that, you most definitely have to be careful of, you know, where you are and what type of presence that you bring around. So, you know, there again, you know, as players are told the same thing as far as when they're out in the public, owners have to also be cautious of the same thing.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you, Reggie, here that I don't know how else you can really read into these. I think they are what we thought they were, for a better way to say it. And, you know, I think owners are going to have to start being a lot more accountable of a lot of their actions. You know, we've yet to hear anything about Jim Irsay, but then again, you know, the courts haven't decided anything. But at some point, even though Roger Goodell is paid by these owners, he's going to have to start kind of cracking down on their misbehaviors, I guess.
And that was kind of my question posed to Coach, and I'll pose it yet again to him. At what point, you know, from a player's perspective, is the players' union going to start having an issue with the fact that, you know, the owners are now kind of not being prosecuted and persecuted for the things that they're doing? At what point is this going to become an issue with them?
That's a great question, Reginald, and I don't know if it will become an issue with them just because they're not a part of the union. You know, all things that are pertaining to the union are centered around the players. And what has to happen from the standpoint of the owners is that the owners get together and they have to determine how they're going to handle certain internal disciplines if they're there, if they're warranted and or needed.
Right, and then what I was speaking to is to the disparity between the punishments that are handed down or not handed down to owners. And I, again, like Jeremy mentioned, I know that Goodell, that, you know, commissioner works for these guys, but, you know, it's kind of the pot calling the kettle black. You can't really continue doing that and get away with it.
Yeah, it does make for a tough discussion from a management standpoint when the management of an organization has to deal with something that happens with one of their employees, i.e. a player. Now, when it happens internally with management, well, you know, at that point, it's just like any other corporation. You know, management has to deal with that situation internally. And then again, you know, it's going to be interesting how Commissioner Goodell is going to have to approach the public with it, because I'm sure that is something that's on his mind as well.
Yeah, he's got two big issues on his hands there, Jeremy, with Mr. Irsay and Mr. Jones in these photos. I can tell you that.
Well, and, you know, but later on we'll talk more about Mr. Blank here in Atlanta, but I'd be willing to bet that he won't have any behavioral-related issues out of Arthur Blank anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, and several other owners, but more importantly with Mr. Blank, when he comes from the corporate world, Home Depot, et cetera, I think he's kind of used to that. He knows just what Coach was just talking about. Keep the guys around, you know, keep the people from around you so that you don't end up in those situations.
Yeah, definitely. We got a couple other behavioral-related things to get to. We'll kind of briefly go over them real quick. There was a little scuffle because, you know, they're not full-out UFC-style fights, but there was a scuffle at the joint practice of the Cowboys and Raiders over the weekend. A little bit of a pile-up. Maurice Jones-Drew of the Raiders, their new running back, ended up at the bottom. I guess a couple fans took exception to this, and since the fight happened near a group of stands, a Raiders fan took a replica helmet and swung it at a Cowboys player after the scuffle kind of broke up. Is this really a big issue right now, or is this, you know, we can easily quiet this and hope that they don't shut down practices now?
Well, in that particular, and I'll start first as a fan, in that particular area, it's always been a point of concern. I mean, even if you go back to the unfortunate incident in the baseball world where the fireman was beat up badly. I think he was a Giants fan and was at a game and was beaten up by Dodgers fans or what have you. I think it is an issue when you've got fans crossing the line. I mean, I consider myself to be a fanatic. But there are just certain things, and I yell at the players from the sidelines, and I do a whole lot of stuff. But when you're jumping over into the field of action and they aren't allowed to retaliate and they shouldn't retaliate against fans, the NFL is going to have to do something about it, unfortunately, and either push back where the fans have access to and things of that nature in order to handle some of that, because that's unacceptable.
I agree 100%, Reggie. I think from a coach's perspective, and I've had a chance to be down and we have to have these discussions about security and the measures that are taken. Now, again, you want to understand why fans are so upset where the players can't be as personable as they'd like to be. So these are the situations that come up and explain why you have all this security and you have all this distance. Now, I don't know how it was possible that this fan would have been able to get that close to be able to swing a helmet and something that could have easily been charged with aggravated assault or even using a deadly weapon for that matter. But again, these are the measurements that have to be taken, and this is the caution when you're dealing with fans in retrospect when you're talking about the proximity of players. So now I'm sure the NFL and NFL security is looking heavily at that, and I hope that in the future this will be addressed more expeditiously, but more importantly, that they don't go in a different direction and say, well, make all of these practices closed now to the public for that very reason.
Yeah, either that or and Coach, I don't know how long, and maybe Jeremy, you know, how long they have been doing the joint team practices. And I think at a very minimum, that's probably going to be, you know, maybe be affected. The unfortunate thing about isolating the fans, especially when it comes to training camp and practices, is that that's when the fans get to interact with the players a lot. And that's probably a major selling point in a lot of your ticket sales and things of that nature. So it's going to have to be a balance there, but I think those joint team practices you might see get affected because of things like this, and that's unfortunate.
Well, I can go and add to that, Reginald. I don't think that the team practices will go away. The purpose of having them is so that you can, as we like to call it in the coaching world, to see another face. What happens over time when you're scrimmaging internally against each other, you begin to pick up on tendencies and moves, and you tend to kind of sugar things, as I like to call it. But once you have to place yourself in front of a different face, someone from a different team, then one or two things can happen. You get exposed or you step up. So I don't think it's going to affect the actual inner squad scrimmages or practices with other teams like that, but I do think that they are going to start putting probably bigger barriers between where the fans can interact with the players and the players with the fans.
Yeah, and as we that's something they're going to have to address. Is it's almost like in pro wrestling. There's a reason why that barrier's there. Even if you go to a smaller show, you know, maybe down the street, and they don't necessarily have a fence up to keep you away from the ring, there's still kind of the barrier there. You're not supposed to cross. As a fan, you don't touch the wrestlers. As a wrestler, you don't touch the fans, and that's kind of the way it's supposed to be. But as we transition into the last thing, and I kind of anticipate Roger Goodell weighing in on this issue probably within the next week or so. I would imagine it's going to result in about 2 to 3 game suspension. But former Falcon, now Arizona Cardinal, John Abraham has reported to Cardinals camp. And, you know, we're not going to get into real big specifics, but he had a small altercation in Atlanta earlier this year, this offseason, I believe in June. I think he stayed over this way to kind of take care of a lot of that and do what he had to do to right his wrongs. But I think I'm just glad John Abraham's going back to work. I just enjoy watching this guy play.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, again, I think Mr. Goodell's going to have to do something about it at this point, because if you recall, there was an incident of a similar nature when he was here in Atlanta. So I mean, 11 and a half sacks last year, making a Pro Bowl. You guys know how I felt about his release from Atlanta. So I'm like you. I'm just glad he's back to work.
I agree. It's great that Mr. Abraham is back in uniform and he's back with his prospective team. He just has to be careful, you know, being that he's out in Arizona now and not a part of the Falcons where he spent a lot of his time. You know, sometimes the love is not the same from a city from afar. So, you know, again, I hope that everything is okay. I hope that they cleared up the matter. The more important is it's great that he's back with his team and he's back in training camp.
Yeah, and like I said, we're not going to really dive into what he did because, to me, that's a personal nature. And it's not that it was something super bad. A lot of other players end up doing similar things, but to me, John Abraham's one of the good guys, and I'm not going to air his dirty laundry on our show.
Absolutely.
But
we'll
transition into a few other bigger things here. Not really pro-related at the moment, but I think it's big for the game of football. And one of our college contributors, John Watts, posted earlier today on the End Zone Facebook page that Arizona State offensive lineman Chip Serafin officially came out as being gay, which now makes him the first openly gay Division I football player. Now, initially, I went back to John and I said, can you clarify why Michael Sam wasn't the first? Because, I mean, he went to Missouri, I believe, who is in the SEC. And he said Michael Sam came out after he graduated, so this Arizona State guy, Chip Serafin, is now officially the first openly gay Division I football player.
Yeah, you kind of saw the writing on the wall with Michael Sam. I think that given the media hype and some of the commentary behind the timing of when Mr. Sam released his information, came about and maybe, you know, some saying that, hey, that's how he elevated his draft status and so forth and so on. So, you know, I think you'll see more of that. And it's the nature of what it is. And so good luck to that gentleman. I don't think it affects his ability to play football. I just hope that it just doesn't become a media circus for him and his family.
I agree. I think at this point now, the shock factor of this type of conversation has worn itself off. I think now at this point you'll start to see more and more of this across the board, not just in football, but in all of the sports. And now once more and more players come to the table with this, then I think at that point it'll just become a dead issue. And the question then will be, how well does the athlete play and can they move to the next level, whether it be college or how consistent they are as pros.
Yeah, and, you know, for the most part, we can transition into a quick thing about Michael Sam as well. To me, Dan Patrick, and it's not to give, you know, credit to other people or anything, but Dan Patrick to me has had the best quote. He said, "I'm not real concerned what most of these guys are doing off the field, you know, as long as they're not hurting anybody or breaking laws or the CBA or something." He goes, "All I want to know is, can Michael Sam play?" And if you saw him in any of the action for the Rams over the weekend, that first game, I mean, the kid can play. He's got a legitimate shot to actually, you know, be in the league.
Right, yeah, I got a chance to check him out, and you're right. I mean, I wasn't as thrilled with his college play as I was with some other linebackers, but he absolutely belongs in the game, that's for sure.
I mean, there's no doubt that, I mean, he had a very good preseason game. You know, some coaching points I can pull out later, but overall, his ability to prove that he is an NFL player is without question.
The big debate going on right now in Detroit is Ndamukong Suh, if they need to give him a contract extension or risk losing him, or which means they could try to move him this year even. As far as, I mean, he has another option year on his contract, but because of the way they restructured last time, this thing is so backloaded that they're going to take an insane hit to the cap whether they keep him or not. The question really that I raise is, could he be traded? And regardless of how he leaves the Lions, are they a playoff team without him?
Well, I'll start with that. Could he be traded? Well, I know one team down south that I would love to see go after him, regardless of whatever. I mean, given our pass rush issues, and he kind of fits that mold that we're trying to now develop. And I think that, you know, he can be controlled by Mr. Cox and some of those other players and coaches there. How does that affect the Lions? I honestly did not see the Lions as a playoff team with him there. Obviously, the combination of him and Mr. Fairley on that front line, I mean, I think they had some power there. But just as a team overall, when you start talking about the health of their quarterback, I mean, short of Megatron, I didn't really see where they were going to make a lot of noise anyway, personally.
Well, I think they hurt without him, honestly. I think that he is a staple on that defensive line. You know, considering what they tried to build around on the offense to score more, I think that they were going to try to make a real huge push for it this year, but I don't think that they're strong of a team, more especially defensively, without him.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I didn't see them as a playoff team with him, so without him, I don't think they're anywhere close. I think they've been rebuilding for 10, 12, 14 years, whatever, probably, I don't know how long it's been for the Lions, which I wish they'd put it together. I know some diehard Lion fans, and you know, they're almost like Cubs fans sometimes. You just wish they'd put it together once or twice. But, yeah, I see Sue getting moved. You know, I'll give you guys some time to think on it. You know, once we hit the Falcons on stuff, but possibly what the Falcons could give up or what you think they could give up to try to get Ndamukong Suh. But like I said, we'll hit it in the second part of the show today. From one kind of failing team to one who I'm not sure if they quite get it yet, it was announced earlier today that the Browns will start Brian Hoyer in week two. This is 2 weeks in a row that we won't have Johnny Manziel out of the gate. Is this a big story, or is this exactly where it should be?
I think it's exactly where it should be. One of the notes that I read coming out of Browns camp and talking with a couple of diehard Browns fans up there in that area, the locker room seems to be split down the middle between who should start and who shouldn't. So I think, again, you're just playing the odds. I think it's got to be Mr. Hoyer's job to lose. Unfortunately, you know, I think he's going to have to deal with the public scrutiny the day he throws that first interception. So I think it's the right choice, given what he did last year for them. I think it'll become a bigger story probably as the season starts to progress.
I agree. I think the move to keep Manziel on the sideline right now so that he can see the game and can study from a safe place right now is not a bad move. I think eventually over time the pressure of getting him into the game and for the purpose of rebuilding Cleveland and his fan base to a level of capacity, they might succumb to. But overall right now, I think you play it safe and you go with someone who's already proven.
Well, and as far as the Browns, let me throw this out here real quick. With the quarterback debate going, and right now it's still a little one-sided as far as who's being favored based off performance, what if the Browns are using this kind of the way the Patriots tried to? The winner gets the start because they signed Rex Grossman as a backup. So the winner gets the start, and whoever doesn't win this starting job gets dangled in a trade somewhere. If it happens to be, you know, John Manziel, at some point do you still try to dangle him to the one team who still thinks they want him, and that's the Dallas Cowboys?
I think absolutely not. I think that will be a mistake, considering, I mean, the guy, just from jersey sales, was the most popular player selected. He has completely energized the fan base. Regardless of whatever the locker room is saying, every Cleveland fan that I've spoken to only speaks about Johnny Manziel at some point. They're okay with him not necessarily being a starter right away, but they want him there, and I think he'll be there.
I agree. I think he's going to be there as well. I don't think that this is the issue of whether or not Johnny Manziel is going to be a Cleveland Brown. I think what's going to have to happen from a coach's perspective, you have to make sure that, you know, you have to understand that the fan wants one thing and reality speaks another. And so I think that if he even sits a whole year, it's not going to kill him to learn at some point you have to get him into the game so that you can see what he can do against live play. But again, you know, the coach is making the right decision, and I don't think that this situation with him would be something that you have to worry about right now.
Yeah, it's just I like to play the fantasy land on that. I haven't heard anything to the contrary, and it would be a mistake if they get rid of Johnny Manziel, because I believe their season ticket sales are through the roof for the first time since probably Bernie Kosar played for the team, and jersey sales, merchandising, I mean, they're if nothing else, they're going to get their money's worth from his name and his aura, even if they don't get it from his playing. But we'll kind of lead into the, after the first week of preseason here, you know, what have we learned up to this point?
From what I've seen, I mean, you haven't really learned anything, I would say, the first week. And I'll allow Coach Hill to speak more on that because he knows that side of it. The first week being so vanilla, you didn't really see any scheming and any game planning. I did like what I saw out of Mr. Clowney. I like what I saw out of Mr. Matthews. I love what I've seen so far out of Mr. Bridgewater and actually Mr. Carr out there in Oakland. So other than that, I mean, I don't think we've learned just as much as we'll learn, you know, as the season starts to progress, but it's exciting nonetheless.
Well, I can tell you guys right now, from a coach's perspective, one of the things that we have learned is that as players go to Division I and as players play collegiately, period, they are becoming more and more refined and ready to play. I think that's what I've been able to see thus far, is that if you go back 10 years ago, players were just playing off raw athletic ability, and now you're starting to see a lot more of the game being presented in college to the best that it can be presented based on college rules. But a lot of players are coming out much more prepared to enter into the NFL and make impacts right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've gotten to see some of the younger guys play, and we'll get into some of the dynamic Falcons and some of their young depth a little bit later. But the thing I learned is that Bill Belichick almost needs to start reading David Copperfield again or something like that. And I mean the magician, not the Mark Twain novel. What I thought was funny, and I was able to catch a good majority of this game just because I wanted to see this reason. They had Jimmy Garoppolo, their quarterback pick from this year play the second half of the game, and in the first half they had Ryan Mallett play in what looked like a way to showcase him to possibly dangle him in a trade. But, I mean, it's almost like Ryan Mallett tried to study up on the New England play of Tim Tebow from a couple years ago. He looked awful.
Yeah, I did catch some of that too, Jeremy, and yeah, he definitely hurt any potential, at least at this time, for them to move him or dangle him in any trade. And I can't recall who. I believe it might have been the Houston Texans that were in play for him, and they were talking about the first-round pick and things of that nature back then. I know with what they saw, they're probably glad that they didn't make a move on him.
Well, in this case, it did not work out for New England by far. You know, it wasn't a great performance, and now they have to go back and do their due diligence on damage control. So now what they do with this, they just have to play it out and now hope that if they can talk trade agreements that it's only due to injury now and not based on just performance.
Yeah, and speaking of quarterbacks, oddly enough, I'm going to reference the Dan Patrick Show again. I think it was the same show. They had Brady Quinn who called in, and he was talking about he had had his tryout with the Patriots before, and a couple other people had called, and he had went and checked them out, and he had accepted a analyst job with a network, and you know my guess would have been maybe the Big Ten Network, seeing as how he came from Notre Dame, but 2 days after he made that particular statement that he was pretty much done with football, the Dolphins, based off the play against the Falcons, that once again we'll get into in a minute, immediately signed Brady Quinn to be the backup quarterback here.
Yeah, again, I think that's for depth. I think their second stringer looked pretty decent from what I recall, the third stringer. And I think that was more for depth. Let's kind of get some more competition in here and kind of push the envelope. And why not take the chance on a former first rounder to get him in there? I mean, he wasn't doing anything anywhere else other than, you know, commentating or however. But let's get him in here and just see if we can push the envelope a little bit.
Well, Miami definitely needs a quarterback, and I think right now it's an open market there. So they have to most definitely go and through the interviewing process with quarterbacks that might be out there on the market due to cap purposes or whatnot, and try to find a starter and quickly get that person in and get them acclimated to their system so they can try to get a winning season going their way.
Yeah, I wasn't too thrilled with their quarterback play anyway, but I'm not much of a Tannehill fan. I think, you know, he needed more seasoning before they let him start, kind of the way maybe Jacksonville's doing with Bortles. But, yeah, they need somebody like a solid Brady Quinn here. So in case he falters or in case Lovato or whoever it was that played about 3.5 quarters for them against the Falcons, he looked frazzled the whole time. And it could have been the Falcons' defense. But, yeah, Brady Quinn's going to add a lot of depth to them. And the Dolphins definitely need help in that area. But as we go from one quarterback situation to another, the latest, I won't really call it competition, so to say, but the latest big debate is the way the Washington scheme is and the way Jay Gruden likes to run his typical schemes and everything. Kirk Cousins is once again in a situation where the coaching staff scheme fits him more than it does RG3. It kind of brings that debate right back up there. And, I mean, if this was John Gruden, he's going to go with whoever the hottest hand is, whoever the best option is right there. But this being Jay Gruden and a first-year coach, and we all know how Dan Snyder feels about not only the name of his organization, but who should be the face in RG3. I mean, who do you pick out of these guys?
Well, from a play perspective, I mean, if you recall from last year when RG3 got hurt, Kirk Cousins came in. He outplayed RG3 as well. So I think from a fan perspective, while the RG3 name is big and was big, at least initially, I think the fans would probably want to win more than they care about fan recognition, despite what, you know, Mr. Snyder's position on this thing. But I think that it reminds me a lot of the former situation we had here, where we had Matt Schaub and we had Mike Vick. And it was always that situation. Whenever Schaub came in the game, you had those pundits that were kind of, you know, the eyebrows being raised going, wait a minute, you know, this kid might be better than the guy we've got out there now as far as the scheme is concerned. So I think you might be seeing a little bit of that in Washington.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I know Coach Gruden personally. I watched him play his own professional career. I think he's going to play it safe on this. I think Cousins right now fits a pro style. RG still, you know, has some room to learn, believe it or not. Now, athletically, I don't think that Cousins is better athletically. But, again, you can't just live off, you know, your athleticism. At some point, it goes away with your ability to run around and run around, i.e. Michael Vick is a perfect example of that right now. So I think that he'll start Cousins at some point, and RG will realize that he's going to have to get into the system fast, and whatever he thought he was going to be able to get away with won't fly with this particular coach because he, you know, by trade himself was a quarterback. So basically he's putting some, you know, holding his feet to the fire, saying that if you're going to be the face of this organization as its leader, more especially at the quarterback position, then you're going to have to make sure that you are doing all the things necessary. And remember, Coach Gruden comes to them by way of Cincinnati, so he's had time to work with quarterbacks at that position at this high level. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Mr. RG3 is going to do with this now that he has this type of coach and this type of style in front of him.
Yeah, and real quickly, as far as Jay Gruden as a quarterback, I used to love watching him with what was the indoor team he was with? Tampa? Am I correct on that?
He's with Tampa Bay. You got to understand that Jay Gruden is a champion. If I'm not mistaken, he has 7 rings to his credit right now. So, again, he knows the position very, very well, and he's a fierce competitor. So he's not going to buy – you know, I don't want people to take the rookie tag and place it on him as a head coach and not look at his experience and also his ability. So, again, he's a fierce competitor. He's going to put who he feels most comfortable with at all the positions out on the field. And so, you know, there's no safe position with him right now. I can guarantee you that.
Wow, 7 rings to his credit. Look out, Kurt Warner. But, no, I guess I'll throw out that challenge, too, since we've yet to hear back from Primetime's camp as to if he'd like to take me on in that race. I guess we'll go in a skills competition. I'll take on Kurt Warner in case he wants to take me on with that one, I guess.
you swing for the fences, Jeremy. I will say that.
I do agree.
Hey, when you grow up right here in Atlanta, you watch these recent teams, and that's all they like to do, so you might as well do it too.
Indeed.
You know, I guess to go on kind of a, you know, we've kind of went on some fun topics and everything, but now to the somewhat serious one, at least as far as if you're a Jets fan. The Jets, already very weak at the defensive back position, lose Dex McDougal to a torn ACL. He's gone for the year. And Milliner, who I believe was their top-round pick last year, has an ankle injury that we haven't quite heard everything about yet, but when you're already weak at a position and you lose two of your big players, are they in some serious hurt this year?
Well, I mean, absolutely. And that's with any team, you know. Unfortunately, the injury bug is going to hit with those guys. They let Cromartie go last year, and so, you know, that kind of enters into depth issues. And there are not a lot of guys out there on the street from a defensive back perspective. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a tough blow either way it goes.
Absolutely, it's a tough blow for him. You know, being that I'm a secondary coach by trade, and most definitely in the NFL, you have to have a good secondary. I mean, you have to have a secondary that can compete. And more importantly, because of the fact that it's become more of an aired-out game now. You know, it used to be just pound, 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 pound. Now you're airing the ball a lot more. Percentage-wise, and if you don't have a secondary,
and most definitely have depth at that secondary, you have a long season. And remember, coach is a defensive coach by trade. So, again, you know, they had Revis at one time, Cromartie at one time. Look at what that secondary used to be made of, and look at what that secondary is made of now with the injuries. So you're dropping off a lot there, and they have a long season ahead of them if they can't get that corrected quickly.
You know, and I'll give it to them. They're in a division where, you know, Miami likes to run the ball a good bit, so they might could have some good matchups there. But if you're weak at defensive back, how are you going to take on Brady and the Patriots, who love to air the ball out? How are you going to take on Sammy Watkins, who could be the next Calvin Johnson if what everybody says is true? I mean, Rex Ryan is going to have a serious issue if he can't solve that defensive back problem.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And I think he understands that. I think right now their general manager has a lot of sleepless nights ahead of him and how they're going to look at creative ways of finding the money. I think what they're going to be doing most definitely, as I put on my player personnel hat right now, is that they're going to be looking at a lot of these preseason games a little differently, and they're most definitely going to be looking at combing and trying to extract some defensive backs that are going to get cut and they feel comfortable with it. They want to put some trust in now to come in and learn this system and play.
Yeah, and as we transition into last few stories here as we wrap up the first side of our show tonight, the Cowboys cornerback Orlando Scandrick has been suspended for the first four games for PEDs. At some point, are we going to have to up this from four games? Because apparently these guys don't even bat an eyelash at it. They keep doing it.
Well, what's interesting about Mr. Scandrick's situation, which when I read into it, it actually, and I'm not real sure how they classified it as PEDs, because the banned substance or the substance that he was using was the recreational drug they call Molly, which is spoken about in a lot of hip hop circles and just, you know, in the this younger generation in general. Which is a horrible, horrible mix of a tremendous amount of different drugs, from cocaine to bath salts to all kinds of things. So, again, there pops that question again, you know, how do you start to control this versus some of the other drugs that are now, or recreational drugs that are now being allowed by certain states or ratified by certain states? I mean, this isn't performance enhancing. This is just this guy having a good time and being careless. So, yeah, I think you're right in that regard, absolutely. And what's unfortunate is that it's tainting some of the other situations where a player may have taken a supplement or something like that and did not know that it was banned, or it wasn't banned at the time, or just whatever the situation is, it was unintentional to a situation like this where the guy was just being flat-out stupid.
Well, you know, I spoke on this a couple of segments before, guys, and again, what is considered recreational has become almost necessity to a lot of these guys for various reasons, whether it's psychological, whether it's trying to deal with pain management. Ironically enough, I was watching Drugs Inc. last night, and this was the drug that they were speaking of. speaking of Molly, and believe it or not, Atlanta is the capital city for this particular drug now. So as Atlanta has become a haven for a lot of NFL players to come and reside, and players abroad going on vacation, I think one of the things that we can all agree on is that they are drug testing you now. And so if you choose to take this risk, I don't think I, as a player, as a matter of fact, I know as a player, I would not want to risk a multi-million-dollar contract and my livelihood on a moment. You know, I just don't see where that moment is greater than my career. And so now the issue is, it wasn't just a supplement, it wasn't a PED, it was an actual drug. And so now, you know, this can turn into something quite different for him, because now you know, with his respective organization, they have to deal with it internally and also damage control it from the public. But more, but after that, what happens? Do you even have a career at all, considering that they now have listed what it really was?
Well, and to kind of bring this whole first end of our show in full circle here, you know, really, how can Jerry Jones try to stay on and correct a lot of his players, even though these are completely different things, when he can't kind of keep his own social things in check right now without him being blown out of proportion?
Yeah, and again, that's where my question initially came into play, in that, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, whichever, Mr. Jones is not responsible for the punishment of Mr. Skandrick. It's Mr. Goodell. So, again, how does this now cripple Mr. Goodell's hammer when he has to deal with his owner first, who's doing these types of things, and then now is expected to lend punishment to a player?
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be a hard role for him to travel with this. But again, that's why I mentioned earlier that the situation with the owners is that the owners are going to issue that punishment, and owners are not tied to the union. So that's where it becomes a little bit easier for Mr. Goodell to be able to hand out something based on an agreement that they have with the NFL as an organization with the union. Now, with the ownership, you know, again, that's why you see this being very quiet and it's handled a little bit differently and again, delicately when it comes to ownership, because that's something internal. And so at that point, they have to deal with that internal issue.
Right. And as we wrap things up here for the end zone segment of our show, before we take a break and come back with Falcon Zone with a bunch of tons of really cool things going on there as well. We got it's kind of confusing because is it a Thursday game? Is it a Monday night football game on Thursday? Whatever it is, there's a game here in about 15 minutes or so. Just going to get a quick who wins this game or what would you watch for? We got Jacksonville at Chicago. What are you guys watching for? If you are watching, and who wins this game?
Well, me personally, I want to see Mr. Bortles. I haven't seen him play yet. I've read some good things. I want to see what he's doing on that side of the fence. From a Chicago perspective, I mean, I think it's just kind of more of the same. I do expect to see Chicago win this, just because I think Jacksonville is still kind of building, but. I'm going with Chicago, but I think Jacksonville puts up a good showing.
I'm going to flip the coin and say that I think that Jacksonville is more of the upside team. I think they have the ability to win this game. I think Bortles is a guy that they're going to be pushing a lot more to see. He performed very well in his debut, and I think that the kid has a great upside to him and a lot of talent. So with Chicago, I think that, you know, if you are struggling in preseason with a team that's rebuilding like Jacksonville, that, you know, that still has a lot of unanswered pieces, then it's going to say a lot about where Chicago is and what they must do quickly to try to find answers to their problem.
Yeah, and also remember, this being a preseason game, the starters are not going to be in very long whatsoever. So, you know, where typically we're going to see Jay Cutler throw into Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall for four quarters, tonight we may see them for no more than one quarter. So I think overall depth-wise and who's hungrier, and this is not a biased statement because of other shows I may or may not do for this network, but, yeah, I think Jacksonville is going to win this game. It's going to be real close because there's a lot of depth, but Chicago's still got issues on defense. And like I said, Cutler's not going to play the whole time, so – I feel like in the second half when Bortles starts, it has been announced he's going to start in the second half, I believe. I'm looking forward to watching him as well. I haven't gotten a chance to, and all the fans tell me that he's worth watching. So, you know, when we get done here, you know, as our normal schedule will be during the season, we're kind of like the pre-show before the Thursday night game anyway, so we're going to lead you right up to that game here. But we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be here for Falcon Zone. We're going to talk about all kinds of things, from tailgating to some fun matchups that are coming up this week. But we'll see you guys on the other side of the break. Jeremy, the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hi, Jeremy, the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more. If they could only see us in the studio, they'd see six hands in the air right now. It is time for the Falcon Zone. Once again, I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by Mr. Reggie Walker and Coach Haywood Hill. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Maybe we'll have to start video in some of these studio sessions. I think they'd get a kick out of this. But
Not without a relief.
You know, before we get into talking about the Falcons and all the really positive things that I've taken at least out of the last week, Reggie, wasn't it you that said you were possibly tailgating for the game on Friday?
Yes. You mean last Friday or this coming Friday?
Last Friday.
The Dolphins.
Yes.
Yeah, I did get down to get a chance to hang out a little bit with the ATL Falcoholics. But then we kind of went over to the club area because I wanted to see some of the new stadium and what progression they had made on that.
Well,
but I did get to hang out with those guys.
They're definitely one of the bigger groups, and we hope to have them and some of the other tailgate groups that we've come across in the last couple weeks and just some of the people we've known for a long time on to talk about some things. But, yeah, Friday, I don't know if it's exactly the best day to tailgate, at least in the places that I was. A lot of times you need a scuba gear in order to get to the grill. But that's Atlanta weather for you. But, you know, let's talk about that preseason game against the Dolphins. I mean, I could go through the page and a half of notes out of the three or four times I saw this game. But, you know, what are, you know, two or three things you guys took away from this game?
I mentioned this in my recap, sort of a recap that a lot of my friends like to see me have on Falcons games, just in general. Despite the fact that, you know, no scheming was going on and aside, when you're just talking about let's just see what they have. I personally was still not impressed with our pass rush situation. I did not see a lot of penetration. I was surprised to not see as much of Matt Sakwa as I hoped to see, who I thought was going to be a big piece of this puzzle, still think. I was definitely surprised and excited about our run stuff. Our run stop ability was actually a lot more than it, a lot better than it was last year. Obviously, our first team offense, I mean, it just showed. The offensive line held up fairly, extremely well, and Matt Ryan was able to do exactly what Matt Ryan is capable of doing when you give him time. And I know Coach Hill and I have had several conversations. My surprise, or not a surprise, at least in the past, is the emergence or reemergence of Mr. Anton Smith as by far, in my opinion, the best running back that we have on the team.
I do agree. I'll start with the defensive side of the ball, since that's where we started when we were talking about pass rush. I think what you're going to see, whether there's a different game this coming week with Atlanta, I think they just wanted the guys to knock off the rust. This is the difference of when you have that visiting team to come in and scrimmage against you. I think that might have made a difference. I don't think Atlanta has done that as of yet. So they were knocking off a little of rust by seeing the new face. I think that this week you'll see them, you know, pin their ears back a little bit more. You'll see a little bit more of the scheme emerging. I think they had a very vanilla up front scheme, as we like to call it, just to see how guys were getting off the ball and just their physical ability. But going into this next game, they'll now have that to look at, to coach from, and you should see a little different there in the pass rush. As far as Mr. Smith is concerned, I called it a long time ago. I've always said it. I saw it, you know, last year, and I think now Mr. Jackson has something to worry about. This young man most definitely came out and proved himself again to be on the practice squad since 2009. I don't know how much more hungry you can get. And he's proven that he can catch out the backfield. He runs very well. He has a tremendous turnover in his legs. He is a featured back, in my opinion. And I think he should start, and Freeman comes in as a compliment. And that's all I'm going to say about your, you know, you guys and your running back.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with a couple, not really shots, but constructive criticism that I saw. I try to be open-minded about it, but the Falcons' defense was absolutely slaughtered by screen plays. It didn't matter if it was a running back, a wide receiver. It could have been a Greyhound bus, and just for some reason, anytime there was a screen play thrown by the Dolphins, the defense, no matter first, second, third string, I don't know, maybe their mothers could have stopped them a little better, but it was just really hard to watch a screen play against the Falcons defense.
Absolutely, Jeremy. Great point.
Jeremy, I don't mean to interrupt you. Let me tell you what's going on there. They probably played a lot of zone defense into this, and they spaced those guys out. So, again, this was the ability just to see how guys were going to get off the double teams. When you're running screen plays, you know, it's really hard on a secondary because they have to try to turn all the plays inside. So if you're running a lot of zone and guys are back up off the ball and your corner gets caught, as I call it, then it makes, you know, the screen is always going to be there. So, again, you know, this was their opportunity to say, hey, we had you in zone, we had you in, you know, base defense, but we were looking at pursuit to certain things. So some of this was schemed for that very purpose, to see the weakness in it and to see who really could make the adjustments as well. But you probably, as you know, as the preseason games evolve and as they move forward, you're going to see, trust me, you're going to see a different side. They're holding back a lot, guys, trust me. They're not trying to reveal their hand.
Well, Coach, I will agree with you, except they were running out of a base 5-2 defense. So they were overloading with a ton of linebackers out there. And like Jeremy said, I could have gone out there and ran for 6 touchdowns on a screen pass. No, that wasn't me, but I could have.
I thought for a second I saw you there. I wasn't sure.
Never in a Miami Dolphins, never. But, I mean, Jeremy's right. That was a glaring, a huge glaring weakness, and I'll take your word for it and hope they clean that up. But I hope that's not a sign of things to come.
No, I don't. I agree with you, Coach.
It's
they're staying very basic with it, and I believe it was a zone. It looked really bad. And the other thing that I saw, that it wasn't as bad, but they have trouble not only running the ball, but they have trouble in general when the right guard pulls to the left. Now, the right guard typically, at least in what I've seen, in any football-related things with schemes like this. The right guard is the one who pulls to the left, the right. He's your lead blocker going in different directions. I actually knew some right guards years ago, and they were always the active one. They don't usually stay put. But whenever that right guard pulled to the left, no matter who it was, all game long, it's just like they couldn't get it set up quite enough. And, you know, once again, it's a baseline offensive scheme, very vanilla, very plain. But that's two things I thought they needed to kind of work on. Special teams was good. You know, T.J. Yates was okay. He hasn't been with the team very long. So, you know, I give him a pass a little bit there. Sean Renfrey looked as good as he did last year before he got hurt. But the thing that I take away from this, and we'll get into it here in a minute with Hard Knocks as well, is I'd just like to welcome everybody to the Prince Shembo party that I've been talking about since this kid was drafted. You know, Shembo could be the new Spoon, and Spoon could be a new coach somewhere.
Yeah, Prince Shembo looked extremely well. I think that was one of the things, and as you said, we'll talk about a little bit of Hard Knocks. There was some back and forth between him and Warlow as far as, you know, and some people, as far as some commentary that I heard about whether or not, you know, that guy's ready to be your Mike and that guy that's calling those plays. He was assertive. He was all over the field. I was extremely excited about him.
Well, I think that's why he's drafted. I think he will become that middle linebacker that Atlanta's looking for. I think Warlow is a journeyman. I think he's done a good job, but I think overall Shembo is going to be the future at that spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before we get into Hard Knocks, you guys have anything else about the Dolphins game before we get into the Texans?
Well, I would like to add that I found it quite interesting that, you know, that Grimes was, you know, there, and you didn't see much of him as far as play was concerned. So I wonder if he was just a little distracted about missing his Atlanta uniform.
Yeah, probably. But being that he's a starter, I didn't expect to see very much of him. I will say this, Jeremy, it was refreshing to see Mr. Tyler Starr. And some of those other guys, I can't recall the kid's name out of Auburn that recovered the fumble late in the game. But it was good to see that final team defense take a stand and keep Miami getting into the end zone to possibly win that game.
Yeah, are you talking about the fumble caused by Starr?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then the recovery there. I mean, again, even in Hard Knocks, you hear Mike Smith talk a lot about those. Try to fabricate those types of scenarios and play, and they have a lot of drills surrounding that type of thing. But to see it actually, you know, come to pass and these guys actually stood up to the challenge, I was glad to see that.
Yeah, it was Tyler Starr's play on the kickoff team and the coverage team that earned himself some reps on the defense. You know, as we'll talk more about on Hard Knocks, but they show that cutaway where the guys in the booth said, "Hey, you know, give me Starr, give me Shembo, give me Starr on the right side," or something like that. I want to see this kid out here.
Yeah, absolutely. And he completely bull rushed the guy in front of him and hit the quarterback, kept the quarterback from picking the ball up, and then had another guy kind of come in and grab it. So that was good to him. Kudos to him on that play.
But
Smallwood.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm sorry, the linebacker, Smallwood, was all over the field. All over the field. And that's going to be the kid now that I'm going to keep my eye on, him and Mr. Jock Smith, number 43, who's also the other linebacker that's always getting into altercations with all the other players. reference. Those two kids, you got to keep an eye on. But Smallwood was absolutely all over the field.
Yeah, I don't want to compare him to this guy directly, but in particular point I'm making, it's who he reminded me of, is that Smallwood reminded – the way he was all over the place and always on top of the ball, he was almost like a Troy Polamalu. Is every time you look up, wherever the ball is where he was.
Oh, absolutely. And with text form tackling. So it was refreshing to watch him play.
But we'll quickly move into a preview of this week's game. I believe it's a – is that a Friday night or a Saturday game? I don't have it in front of me.
That's a Saturday game against the Texans.
Right. And, you know, what I really look at is is one particular matchup that I'm really excited for, and I'll have to make sure I get to see it. And first of all, you got, you know, because of the trade earlier this year, T.J. Yates gets to go back to Houston, where, you know, he's been for the past few years and where he's actually put up some decent numbers for him. Akeem Dent will actually get to see his old Falcon buddies. But the thing that I really look forward to in this is watching Jadeveon Clowney and or J.J. Watt match up against Jake Matthews. Because from what I've seen of Jake Matthews, I don't know if anybody can get past him.
Yeah, and it's funny because Atlanta actually had their practices this week, their joint team practices with the Texans, and they talked about the matchups. Clowney did not go against Jake. He actually went against Sam Baker, and you had J.J. Watt on the other side against Jake Matthews. And in the first set of practices, Jake Matthews just absolutely manhandled Watt most of the time. And then Watt was able to pull a couple of those veteran moves from some of the notes I saw in today's practice. Clowney, on the other hand, Sam Baker actually held up pretty well against Clowney, but then, you know, obviously Mr. Clowney decided to turn it up a notch, and then he started to get ugly a little bit later. But, yeah, you're right. I think that's where this offensive line, this game, is now where we see exactly at least the blueprint of what type of offensive line we can expect this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this game gives you two dominating pass rushes, and now everybody has to hold their own. I think with Mr. Matthews, I call him a clone. I think that his DNA is there and it's proven. I want to back up into the Miami game where I saw him a little disengaged when Coach Tice was trying to go over a particular blocking scheme, and he was kind of off in the la-la land, I think because he's heard it like a million times. However, I think that he's the type of player that he plays to the level of his competition. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to raw you, but if you are a raw guy, he's going to meet you at that point. So I think that this game you're going to really get a chance to see what Matthews is made out of, and I honestly believe that they're going to shoot both guys at him. I think you will see Clowney switch sides some in this game to see how well he's durable and holding up against the speed rush versus a massive body that you see in J.J. Watt. So it's going to be real interesting to see what comes of it. And then also on the flip side of that, how, you know, if they do flip them, how does Baker hold up against Watt as he holds up against Clowney? So they're going to move those guys around to see if those guys tie out quick, more importantly, what works best for them in getting to the backfield.
You know, based off the problems that Houston has, you know, still trying to figure out their defense, really after those two rushers, they got Cushing coming back, which could help, but it's kind of sketchy after that. And given the fact that they don't exactly have the best quarterback, as far as point differential for this weekend, if I set the over-under at 20, where you guys fall on that as far as the Falcons' point differential to Houston?
Well, I'm allowing Coach Hill to – I'm not a big gambler myself, so I don't even really understand what it is. Jeremy, you and I have to sit down and talk about that, so I'll yield to Coach Hill on that.
I don't think Atlanta goes out as high as 20, you know, as far as beating the Texans. I think – again, they are all professional athletes, and, you know, ego and pride steps into play for them. I do feel that Atlanta probably has the upper hand because they have a team that is a little more veteranized at this point, and they're not trying to figure out big positions like quarterback and some other things. I think defensively Houston will play okay, you know, with the interior line as far as the line play and the linebackers. But I think when it comes to their secondaries, that's where they're going to be very vulnerable, and it depends on how well Clowney can hold up condition-wise. But, again, you remember a lot of these backups are going to play. So when you're looking at building a team, you got to think about, you know, just that. And I think Atlanta's second group is probably by far better than Houston right now. But I don't think it's by 20 points by no means. I think at best this game is won by 10 points at the highest.
Basically, Reggie, what I'm saying is the final score, are the Falcons going to outscore them by 20 or more or less than 20 is basically what the plus or minus on that is.
Gotcha. I'll never forget it now. So I agree with Coach Hill. I don't think I don't think it's 20 or over. I think so. Then in that case, I would say under. Correct.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah, if this were not a preseason game, I would definitely take the over. I think it would be a clear-cut, great way to make some money if you were going to place a bet. Clearly, you can't do that in the state we all live in. But, you know, if you were to find a casino maybe across state lines, you could. But, yeah, being a preseason game, I'm right with you guys. If the Falcons outscore them, and I'm pretty sure they will, you know, we're looking, you know, 23-13, somewhere in that line.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's see. Before we get into Hard Knocks, they did sign linebacker Darren Drakeford, and they released kicker-punter Sergio Castillo. Castillo did pretty good. He finished the game off doing all the kicking duty, including field goals, punts, kickoffs. I really think they were just trying to give a breather to the other guys. But, you know, in case they ever needed him, I guess they can call him back. But clearly they need a little bit of help in the linebacker area. That's why they got Darren Drakeford. You know, I guess we'll see if he gets to play this week and see what this kid's all about.
Yeah, with the unfortunate ACL injury to the draft pick Spruill, they definitely are now two linebackers down with Sean Weatherspoon and Spruill out. I think even though we picked up Angerer from Indianapolis, I think they're watching the waiver wire now to see who gets released later on in camp. You're going to definitely have to get a bigger presence at the linebacker spot, especially if you can't generate enough pass rush, or whether you can or not, you're definitely going to have to find someone else. So I think he's just a fill-in right now to see what the kid can do. But I think you'll see Atlanta go after a veteran, a cat casualty, somewhat, later on in the year.
I agree.
Yep.
I think that's smart of Atlanta's part. Jeremy. I think Atlanta has done is been very smart about how they play with their money and position what I call the savings account. So now they will basically push a lot of players at a lot of positions as they have to now start looking at cuts. And more importantly, they'll look at veterans and they'll look at what they feel the diamonds in the rough. But Atlanta's in a very good position financially to go after players as they start to dwindle down their roster and move closer to opening day.
Yeah, and, you know, I brought up earlier about the Ndamukong Suh situation with Detroit. Have you guys been able to come up with maybe a couple players you'd like to ship out to bring Suh here?
Well, for the sake of those that we have listening, I will digress. I'll talk about that with you behind the scenes, considering, you know, just to keep it classy on our show. But yeah, I got a couple in mind that I think that they may be interested in, especially on the offensive side. I'll just put it that way.
I would go as far as to say just continue to watch the cuts. Now, remember, you know, it's a long season. Atlanta's already been smart about their money in the beginning. Players, I will say this much as a coach, they better perform. They better perform because this is the year that Atlanta, make no mistakes about it, they're going to make a huge push for it. And you can already see that just in what they brought in at the quarterback position. You know, it was a position that had not been challenged in a while. They brought in another guy that can play and start right now, or as I like to call it as a coach, plug and play. So, again, Atlanta is one of those teams where things are not safe. You know, nothing is in concrete. So, you know, you have a couple of players at a couple of positions, but trust me, they are looking at every position and critiquing it very, very well and saying to themselves, if somebody goes down, are we satisfied with the next guy that can step in? So let's just watch the waiver wire. I mean, don't be too surprised at some things that you still see up to the actual Saints game.
Yeah, I won't go so far as to say that you probably know something that we don't know there, Coach, but I feel like you probably do have a little more insider information than we do. So I do look forward to see what happened there. And since you guys won't go out on a limb, I guess I will and take one for the team. And it's nothing personal to the guys I name, but, you know, if this were Madden or something like that, you're going to have to give Detroit something that they can use and something – you know, you're going to have to give up something to get Sue, even though you're picking up part of that contract. Just off the top of my head, if they're losing a rusher, you got to give them a rusher. So why not Croy Bierman? The change of scenery may actually do him a lot of good, take a lot of the pressure off of living in Atlanta and being on two reality shows. You know, Detroit would be a little easier there. And then they could use some depth behind Reggie Bush. So depending on the Steven Jackson situation and the emergence of Anton Smith, as we've talked about as well, you know, why not send Jaquizz Rodgers up there to back up Reggie Bush or to go a 1-2 punch, and it'd probably cost you a third-round pick as well. But, you know, that's just a fantasy land trade, and I have nothing against those two players. I really don't want them off the Falcons team, but, you know, for Sue, you're going to have to give up something, so it may cost you like that.
Yeah, you touched on actually, too, that I was thinking and also considering the fact that they are a little light at the receiver position. There was and the emergence of Mr. Reedy, who I think can spell a certain veteran receiver here, that I can see maybe Mr. Harry Douglas being included in that trade as well.
Yeah, he was actually a name that came to mind too. And once again, it's, we don't know anything. We're playing fantasy land here, and we're saying that as far as, you know, for a deal like this, you're going to have to give up something, that, and Detroit could use the players such as those. But we're happy with all those guys still being here, and that'll transition us right into Hard Knocks. To me, this, I mean, I wish I could watch it all week long, all day long, because it's a really entertaining show, as the Hard Knocks series typically is, but it's fun because these guys are in our backyard. These are guys we've all been following for years, and even the new guys, you know, these are all guys we've been familiar with. But, you know, the Shembo thing for sure, but I think that one of the bigger stories of the emerging guys is to see where Rashid Hageman's going to end up, because, I mean, he'll have these moments of brilliance where he just plays his butt off and does these exceptional things. And then he has these other moments where he, like, gets in a scuffle in practice, which seems to be kind of regular, and he ends up injuring his wrists. So, I mean, you kind of got to – he's one of those guys I think you got to keep busy, because if he gets kind of bored or a little bit of downtime, he's going to find trouble.
Absolutely. You took the words right out of my mouth. I think Brian Cox is going to have his hands full with this guy, and Brian Cox mentioned it a couple of times and saying, hey – the day that this kid decides on his own that he's a superstar, then you're going to have to look out for him. But right now, it goes to show. I was able to see, yes, in watching him and his demeanor, the way that he carries himself, why he dropped from that first rounder down to that second rounder. It's not talent. It's between the ears. So, that was very interesting to watch. Very interesting to watch. And that's where I say an Ndamukong Suh that could come in here and, you know, might be a little tough because, you know, they kind of have some of the same issues. But that being said, Brian Cox is going to have his hands full trying to get that kid right.
I mean, sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. Again, it's going to be very interesting because, you know, as I stated earlier, Atlanta can play the wait-and-see game right now. Most teams cannot. So if this young man continues to show a particular behavior, although they're looking to change the face of Atlanta and be known as a tougher football team, if this doesn't translate into him making those type of plays on the field consistently, then trust me, you know, he's putting himself in a position that he might not want to be in. So fighting with your teammates and all of that stuff is training camp. So in training camp, there is a lot of attention because you don't just really know, especially if jobs are opening, and you see those jobs opening. But the difference between this young man and Sue in Detroit is Sue has the experience now. So he knows how to reel that in or how to dish that out appropriately. If you remember when he first came into the league, he did not know how to handle that appropriately. Now he knows how to handle that appropriately, which makes him, you know, an attraction if Detroit can't get the deal done there. Don't be surprised that Atlanta will be willing to make a move like that. Because, again, they're not going to play any games this year, guys. Atlanta's going to be very serious about every position and every backup that falls into that slot. The situation now is going to be that every player who has on a Falcons helmet has to be looking over his shoulder at the guy standing next to him on his left and on his right, because they're going to say, hey, it's open season now, and we're going to put the best players on the field to produce the wins that we need to get us where we want to go, and our goal being, you know, NFC Championship, if not Super Bowl.
Right, and some of the other things we kind of learned, Freeman's taken quite a few hits, especially in practice, and Roddy White has proven to be the outspoken entertainment for sure of all the – him and William Moore going back and forth to me is something I look forward to every week. But also, as they showed the in-depth thing of Roddy in practice and Roddy, the few plays he got to play on for the preseason game, if you didn't think this guy was a top five, top three receiver, just watch him play. And when they showed that close up where he can outplay almost anybody off the line, I mean, it is insane to see that inside depth look for people who didn't know how good Roddy White really is.
Yeah, I took a look at that too, Jeremy, and that's the other thing that I mean, plus on top of the fact Atlanta has done right by him. And he, as you heard the commentary between him and Mr. Umeniura, you know, he's a Falcon for life. He's that guy who's going to have his jersey in the rafters one day, and that's got to obviously put his mind at ease for him and his family. So I think you're going to see Roddy just flat-out play this year. I mean, Julio's already kind of put it out there and said that he and Roddy are both targeted 1,500-yard seasons this year. So it's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be that much. I think you'll see Atlanta run the ball a lot more, but – yeah, it is amazing to see Roddy at this stage in his career still be able to do the things that he was doing early on in his career.
Was it 15 or was it 2,000 apiece, he said?
He said 1,500. Okay. That's what I read. Okay.
Okay.
Well, one of the things that I always said about Roddy White, again, like I said, I'm a secondary coach, so I can see some, you know, some weaknesses. He shows consistency in his ability to play. But the one thing that's going to be real interesting about him targeting 1,500 yards is how he gets these yards. I think that, you know, until they find an answer to another guy that can get vertical fast, I think eventually over time, Roddy White's spot will be the slot. I think the slot position is better for him. I think, you know, he can get those yards with you because there's no one that can cover him from the slot. Well, again, You know, it depends on how many passes he can get, and more importantly, how well the line can hold up. That's a tall order for both receivers to target 1,500 yards. That means if they don't plan on running the ball a lot, what are they saying to their quarterback? We're looking for the ball every other play. And to do so, you better have an offensive line that is, I mean, they are the Secret Service, basically, for the lack of better terms. So it's going to be real interesting with them putting it out there as a dynamic duo, if you will, to both be looking at over 1,500, you know, at 1,500 yards, and then how to get those 1,500 yards is going to be the other, you know, spoken piece of this. So it's going to be real interesting to see what Atlanta does. I mean, Matt Ryan has a lot of tools. I mean, again, he doesn't have Gonzalez, but he does have receivers. He does have a running game behind him. He does have running backs that can catch the ball at the backfield. He does have a line that's improved. So it's going to be real interesting to see, you know, what Atlanta does from an offensive perspective. I'm interested to see what they do with this.
Yeah, I keep telling you, watch out for Mr. Reedy. That you talked about that receiver that has that vertical ability. I mean, the kid is only 5'8", but he looks a lot like Steve Smith and has the speed to show it and the toughness. And he might just be that guy that could give Roddy the ability to move into the slot like you mentioned.
Well, if you guys noticed some of the stuff from their practices and even in the game, and Matt Ryan even hit on it, I believe, in the Hard Knocks This Week episode, he kind of mentioned to Roddy about how free he is to roam in the middle like that, and they've kind of put him in slot a little bit more than normal. And I believe it was Matty Ice that said, you know, Roddy, that used to be Tony G, territory, and he used to get yards all day long right there. So now they're your yards.
Right, right. Yeah, that was actually, and that was the other thing that came out of Hard Knocks, and I've read in some other articles, is how much more vocal Matt Ryan has become. In one segment, they actually showed Matt Ryan come into the wide receivers room and critique someone, I can't recall, it may have been Harry Douglas, tell him, hey, I don't care that you stop, I just need to know, you know, how to actually adjust my throw. And he critiqued a couple other things, and then he quietly, you know, left the room. So it's been interesting to see how he has stepped up vocally.
Yeah, exactly. And let's see, the other thing of note, I thought it interesting that not only are they profiling Tyler Starr, but, you know, to start with, he wasn't really holding up his end of what they thought, at least. And he needed to keep digging. But, you know, towards the end, he was able to earn those reps on defense and then ultimately pretty much win him the game with that turnover.
Yeah, I think he's definitely still a dark horse in a lot of regards. I mean, he'll definitely make the special teams. But as far as how many reps he gets with the defense, is going to be kind of up in the air. But, yeah, it was really good to see him start to turn it up. I mean, they knew the kid had talent. I think he just needs to transition what he has and his knowledge to the NFL, and I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that, you know, this is why you have a scouting department. This is why you spend, you know, for the full-time scouts, 280 days on the road looking for just such a talent as this. And I think he's going to be okay. I think he'll, you know, as the preseason games continue to get that experience under his belt, you'll just see more and more of him settling down and feeling more and more comfortable with what he's doing overall.
And last thing I wanted to hit on before we – I kind of have a trivia question, but I talked to you guys earlier in the week about it, so you may just remember what it is anyway, but it's kind of a cool story. But before we get to that, Devontae Freeman did leave practice Monday with the trainers. Coach Mike Smith said he didn't think it was very serious. Turned out it was just dehydration. Now, for the most part, that means, you know, you probably went and you got an IV and you left on your own, you're fine. And he's been fine the rest of the week. He seems to be holding up good. My only thing is I just hope it's not him trying to overdo it to try to gain a spot or something like that, and he makes a habit of always kind of being fatigued.
Well, I mean, another thing, too, a lot of these players are having to get used to. And even though Mr. Freeman was down in Tallahassee, the humidity here in Atlanta is unlike anywhere else in most places. So I'm pretty sure that had a great deal to do with it as well. But, yeah, I think he's solid. I think he knows he's safe. He's got a place, whether he's that second or third guy or actually fourth guy. I mean, I don't think that he has to worry about that. From what he's chronicled, he's just that guy that has that high motor. He's always had that high motor. But I think Atlanta's humidity just has a lot to do with that.
I agree. I think the humidity plays such a huge role. And even in my own experiences as a coach, you know, being out in Texas and you have, you know, three-digit days, you know, all of the time and, you know, upper 90s at 11 and 12 at night, it was the first place I've ever seen people cut grass at night. I mean, like 10, 11 o'clock at night. So, again, I think the humidity plays a huge role. And I think now his body is just adjusting to that, being that he's outside, like you said, Reginald. You know, he's in Tallahassee. He had some humidity. But there's nothing like Atlanta. I mean, nowhere in the United States, I don't think there's anything quite like Atlanta. So I think he'll now understand how to hydrate better and have himself ready. I think that the trainers as well as the team physician has told him what to do, how to do it, and he's maintaining that regimen.
Yeah, I think he's going to be okay. I do agree. We have some of the most unique weather here in the Atlanta metro area for sure. As somebody who's worked out in it many, many days and just doing yard work. And, you know, funny you had mentioned that about the grass, as the maintenance guys here around the studio are currently cutting the grass as well. But I think it's smarter to cut the grass around here at night. But as we transition out of here into the final phase of Falcon Zone, we'll kind of get into the trivia question. And I can't remember if I talked to you guys about this or not, but I guess to kind of quash the rumors of a possible comeback at this particular stage, Tony Gonzalez actually just wrapped up a project he's on. Do you know what project that is?
I do not know. Seems like I remember, recall seeing a newspaper clipping or somewhere, but I didn't pay much attention to it. He's no longer a Falcon.
I think that's safe to say.
I can't say that I know either, Jeremy.
He is actually going to be on, according to the press releases, I read a handful of them just to confirm everything. According to quite a few sources, he's going to be on at least one episode of NCIS this upcoming season, which debuts on September 23rd, I believe. It usually comes on Tuesday nights. So it from the screenshot that I saw on Instagram and the other cast members that were talking, I feel like he may have a recurring role or two, maybe at least a couple episodes in a row where he's going to play an NCIS agent, maybe trying to investigate some of the crimes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, good luck, Mr. Gonzalez.
From catching footballs to catching criminals.
Right, right.
Would you really run from Tony Gonzalez if he's chasing you?
I don't know if you could beat him.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to try to throw evidence somewhere. I'm sure he's going to catch it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, we need sound effects, don't we? We need to get right on the show about having sound effects. But that is going to do it for us for this week's End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Before we get out of here, as always, you can find us on our Facebook page for End Zone. At 3EndZone is the show's Twitter. At Leanne73 is Reggie. At the Impact 99 is me on Twitter. We're working on getting Coach Hill more into the Twitter speak, and then you can hit him up as well. 3EndZone@gmail.com if you want to email the show with your questions, comments, suggestions. If you want to find out where to mail us a chocolate cake or anything like that as well, we would appreciate those. You can find us on iTunes. Just search for either of our shows or Impact Media. Do want to give a quick shout-out on the Arizona State player story. Once again, that was from one of our college contributors, John Watts. Also, a couple of our contributors, they do TurfTalkPro.com. That's Mr. Devin Richardson and Heath Spears. Appreciate you guys as well. And check out TurfTalkPro.com. They have a lot of fantasy debates going on right now, maybe to help you out pick your team. And, you know, we'll go on and announce it now. Harper LaBelle is going to be back on with us next week, and we look forward to a fun time with him.
I'm looking forward to seeing him on the show again.
It's always good having Harper on, and we always enjoy having him on. But for the coach and Mr. Walker, I am your host, Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.